You're listening to Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty.
Law and order have broken down in Detroit, Michigan.
We look down 12th Street and all you see was fire and smoke.
Oh, the motor city is burning.
Those shots are being fired on 12th Street.
Chaos, just everywhere, people everywhere.
I said, this can't be happening to my city.
The madness overtook everything.
Anything in the world that Johnny can do.
Through the ages, one very powerful way to bear witness to history is through drama, through theater. And that is certainly the case with a living history play titled Afterlife, based on oral histories of women and girls who lived through the 67 Detroit Rebellion. The play is conceived by Dr. Lisa Biggs, who's an assistant professor in theater and performance studies at Michigan State University. It's directed by Kristen Horton. And with us now is Lisa Biggs and one of the actors from Afterlife, actor-writer Deborah Chenault-Green. It's so good to have you both with us. Thank you for having us. Lisa, how did you conceive of this play?
You know, in 2013, I moved to Michigan from Chicago, south side of Chicago, and I wanted to learn a lot about Michigan history. So I realized pretty quickly, you know, the 67 Rebellion was a pivotal event in the state's history. But it also became clear to me that a lot of my students did not know what had happened, even though they're Michigan kids. So Residential College in the Arts and Humanities, where I teach, I had a chance to create a course that had units in which we could study the events of 67. And then being a theater artist about a year ago, I said, you know, these oral histories are amazing. And wouldn't it be fabulous if we could figure out a way of staging them? So I wrote for a grant, a couple of grants. The Knight Foundation was kind enough to fund us to be able to develop the piece in Detroit. So it started off as a personal research project and then became a project with students. And now there's this opportunity to rework and expand the piece in the 12th Street, the historic 12th Street community.
When you talk about staging that, how is it constructed? What is it we see?
Well, it is about an hour long, the play, and it takes place at the Joseph Walker Williams Recreation Center, which is at the corner of 12th and Euclid, or now Rosa Parks Boulevard. We do the play. It's an ensemble of nine. Deborah Chenault-Green is part of the ensemble. And we go back and forth. They play multiple roles. And we just move through one scene after another, monologues, poetry, song, dance, movement. So it's an interactive piece.
And I know, Deborah, and having you here, you are someone who remembers exactly what happened that week. You were, what, living at your aunt and uncle's house in summer 67?
Actually, I was at my aunt and uncle's house preparing for a birthday party for my mom later on that day.
And how old were you then?
I was 12 years old. Okay. So I was over there helping them get ready for the party. And my cousin and I, that night, that Saturday night, pulled the mattress off the bed because it was so hot. And we laid it on the porch, and that's where we fell asleep. And then we woke up to the noise. We just heard people screaming and hollering, things breaking. Later, about an hour later, we could see flames in the sky and smoke. It was chaos. And my other cousin, her older sister, she wasn't home. She had went missing. So they had to get up and go look for her. So it was a whole lot of moving around, a whole lot of chaos, fear, terrible fear, because we had no idea what was going on until later on that day.
And then how did it feel as that week went on?
It felt like we were in a war zone. It actually did, because our streets had never been invaded by armed men. You know, we had the police, yeah, but to see the tanks and the men with the rifles and the gear and everything at 12 years old, it was very frightening, you know, because we didn't know what was going to happen to us. We were afraid, you know, and even though the parents or my mother at the time tried to keep us some type of normalcy going on. In the daytime, we would go out and play. She wouldn't be far away. But at night, it really became scary, because that's when we heard most of the gunfire. And that's when we first learned to hit the floor, you know. And some nights we spent all night on the floor.
You know, it strikes me, Lisa, as Deborah talks about her mother trying to keep a sense of normalcy under anything but normal. The importance of having this be women's voices. Tell us more about why you chose that point of view.
Well, women have been my greatest teachers time and time and time again. And when I was learning about the events of 67, I was really concerned by the lack of their voices in the published narrative. So in the history books, but also in the newspaper articles that appeared at the time. And part of that, you know, it's 1967, so it's pre-second wave feminism. And so women, of course, are working behind the scenes, mm-hmm. you know, in every arena that you can imagine. But yeah. news reporters would not have gone to them to ask their opinion. And unfortunately, it looks like at the time also historians were not so much interested in finding their opinions. And for myself, like I said, women have been my greatest teachers. And so I wanted to create a project in which we could listen to them and kind of address some of those gaps, mm-hmm. But also do more than kind of, you know, just add women's voices to the story. What I've really learned is that there's another perspective on life in the city that women can share, and they do. And that insists on the inclusion of a gender analysis. So the role of women in the past, but also the women I've spoken with, they really, you know, have a long time commitment to the state of Michigan and to Detroit, and they are movers and shakers. And I think far too often women's contributions, their intellectual work, their knowledge has been overlooked. And so the hope is that the play can, it's not going to tell every story, but that it can create a space in which we might learn a little bit more about the past and then have a much larger conversation about women's contributions and their needs today.
We're talking about the play Afterlife, a living history play that is based on oral histories of women and girls who lived through the 1967 Detroit Rebellion, conceived by Dr. Lisa Biggs of Michigan State University, who's here. And also one of the actors in the play is writer Deborah Chenault Green. And Deborah, you are going to, in the play, you perform one of your poems called 12th Street Pre-67 that really talk about a sense of place, gives us a very close and personal idea of what the neighborhood was like before that week of violence. Would you share that poem with us?
Of course, of course. Hopscotch, tag, hide and go get it. Baseball in the alley, nowhere to hit it. Boys wearing holsters and guns, learning to shoot. Riding the popsicle bikes, pockets full of loot. Hot days, steamy nights. Mattress on the porch because it feels right. Did you hear James was stabbed? Almost pierced his heart. Down by Eli Wilson's cleaners. They say by Crazy Mart. Over some girl later seen with Flip. Hot dogs, Kool-Aid, potato chips. Block parties, swinging, dancing in the streets. To my girl, heat wave, just bopping to the beat. We interrupt your programming to bring you this important announcement. President Kennedy has been shot and killed. Penny Candy, Dotnetta's, Miss Harrison's Beauty Shop, Henry's Pig Feet in a Jar, playing tag, hot tamale man, catch me if you can. Music heard all night long from the Calumet Bar, the innocence and beauty of 12th Street, pre-67, before the community died.
That is really powerful, yeah. Deborah. Thank you for sharing that.
Oh, my pleasure.
We hear so many different terms to describe what happened that week in July 67. We hear riot, uprising, rebellion. When you think of it, what words do you use and why?
When I think of it, I think of rebellion. And that's because I knew the situation pre-67. I knew of the incidences of the Big Four coming through the neighborhood and, you know, harassing the young black men and even young black women.
And the Big Four being?
The Big Four was a unit of the Detroit Police Department that rode four deep, two in the front, two in the back. And they would harass, they would just go through and harass and beat up and arrest for no reason all throughout the community. So I knew what was going on with that. I knew that everybody in the community basically knew that this couldn't go on. And we knew that something was boiling, you know, because it was an everyday thing, you know, that our men had to go through. And these were men, a lot of these men were men who served in Vietnam and who came back and had to face this type of thing, you know. So it was something that was brewing. And I think that we eventually rebelled against that.
Lisa, can you give us a taste of maybe a few of the other stories that we're going to be hearing when people come to see Afterlife?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Two in particular
there's stories that often don't get told. The story of Cynthia Scott, who was a black woman sex worker who was killed in July, actually, of 1963. So 4 years before 12th and Claremont went up in flames. And her murder at the hands of two white police officers became a rallying cry for many members of the community. Also, the story of the murder of another black woman sex worker, Vivian Williams, which happened about a week or 2 weeks before 12th Street, went up in flames. The reason that these stories are important is because there was a pervasive sense that there was no justice for the black community. And in general, Deborah's stories about seeing kids get, you know, mistreated by police, the big four. Oftentimes we think of that violence only being directed at men, but there was a deep sense of outrage that women were being mistreated. And what I love about the story, even though I mourn the loss of these two women's lives, is that, you know, it kind of ties together something that we see going on today with the Black Lives Matter organizing. Under that banner, you know, we understand that they mean all black lives. They mean women. They mean members of the LGBTQ community. They mean people with who are living with disabilities. They mean the incarcerated. They mean everybody. All Black Lives Matter. And that kind of sentiment undergirded and animated and fueled people's activism. So the night of July 23rd, 1967, when the police raided the party at 12th and Claremont, all that rage was behind the bricks and the bottles that were thrown.
I want to end by asking you, Deborah, you say mm-hmm. you call this, you know, you lived through this as a young girl, rebellion for mm-hmm. many reasons. Did that rebellion change anything?
In the community, you mean? No. No, I really don't think it did. We did get some more African-American policemen, you know, and I'll say that was a good thing because I think that the police force should be representative of the community that you're in.
African-American mayor.
African-American mayors. We've had African-American mm-hmm. mayors. But as far as that 12th Street area, nothing much changed. There's still buildings that were burned from the riot still there. They've just started tearing down some. You know, that community, it was like they said, okay, they burned it, let them live in it. And so they built up around us. But the core, they're just coming in now to try and beautify the neighborhood and do different things with playgrounds and houses they're building now. But it's been 50 years.
So changing the name 12th Street to Rosa Parks Boulevard.
Right. Yeah. You know, you can change the name of something, but that doesn't change the place. That doesn't change the situations in that neighborhood. That just changes the name.
The play is called Afterlife. For more information, you can go to the stateside page at michiganradio.org. It's being performed at the Joseph Walker Williams Recreation Center. We've got all the details up at michiganradio.org. Conceived by my guest, Dr. Lisa Biggs, and among the performers, actor and writer, Deborah Chenault Green. Thank you so much to both of you for being with us on stateside.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.